Hey everyone, this is Brian from the Tennis IQ podcast. Josh and I hope that you're enjoying the content and discussions that we put out week after week. If you'd like to support the podcast and help us to continue to produce quality episodes, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Currently, we have two tiers of support, $3 per month and $7 per month. So again, our Patreon page is patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Thank you so much. And now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis IQ podcast. I'm Josh Berger.
And I'm Brian Lomax. And today, Josh and I are going to discuss something, I guess, at least to kick off the conversation, a model of performance, a model of learning that's called the resonance performance model. And we'll describe this a little bit, but then really try to relate it to a more practical application for all of you, the listeners, players, coaches, etc. And I think that this is really a gateway to learning more about yourself, learning more about how to improve your own game, a gateway to increasing self-awareness and self-knowledge. And I think a lot of the growth in a sport like tennis comes from that exploration of yourself, how you feel, what things feel like on the court, etc. And so just to introduce the resonance performance model, and the model itself, I would say, Josh, is really more of a high-level performance, but I think you and I will probably take it down to maybe more granular aspects of tennis performance. So the idea of the resonance performance model is that there is some sort of vision or dream of how, you know, what you want to accomplish in sport. And we have often talked on this show that we're all trying to become the best tennis players that we can become, at least for those of us who see, you know, mastery and competence as their most important motivation for playing. And of course, you can write about that or talk about that, you know, in different flavors. Maybe it's about your dream is just playing challenging matches all the time and feeling, you know, connected with those you compete with, etc. Right? Things like winning titles or winning conference championships, etc. Those are, I think we often confuse those as our dreams, but they're really goals or milestones. You know, the dream itself is this sort of hopefully significant feeling that you have. So something that helps give a lot of meaning to your tennis that you can connect with. And the idea of the model is to really describe that and feel that and know what that is and try to enjoy that as much as possible. And so I've often taken this model down to as I said earlier, a more granular level, looking at maybe different strokes and how to apply this idea of feeling and self-awareness to the learning of a particular skill in tennis. So, for example, an exercise I might do with a player would be, especially for a stroke that they're trying to learn something new on, is, you know, describe for me or imagine for me what it would ideally feel like to hit this stroke exactly the way you'd want to. What kind of ball would you ideally like to create off of this? Is it a very heavy ball? Is it flat? Is it a lot of pace? Where do you see this landing? What's the trajectory? And again, how are you feeling? What's your balance? What's your level of tension in your body, etc.? And just then try to turn that description into a feeling through visualization and imagery so that they can begin to practice that. And then when you're on the court, it's not so much about was something right or wrong. It's more about, hey, how did that feel? Tell me about that. Is there an analogy you could use for the swing or the technique that instead of focusing so much on racket take back, wrist angle, contact point, etc., that it's more about you associating with something that, like, maybe it's a baseball swing. Maybe it's throwing a frisbee. Something that you could then use. And so this becomes a way, I think, Josh, of bringing feel more into it. And I think there's a better, you know, dialogue, potentially, between the coach and the player, and then they're both invested in this. You know, and we had a pretty good discussion about this before we began recording. So I'll just stop there just to get, you know, some of your preliminary thoughts on this and relating it to, you know, some of the other things that you've read and that you've used in your practice.
Yeah, so I there's a lot that I like about it. I mean, I think helping athletes really try to improve on that self-awareness of feel and what is something supposed to feel like, or, you know, I think it connects to what something's supposed to look like and having a really clear vision for, okay, what is my forehand or what is my serve? What is that supposed to look like? And then what is that supposed to feel like? Can I close my eyes? Can I visualize exactly what that is supposed to feel like, right? When I hit that serve the way that I want to, if I'm working on my kick serve, if I hit that kick serve the way that I'm trying to, you know, hit my best kick serve, do I have a really clear vision for what that feels like? Can I feel like, again, if we're sticking with that kick serve example, can I feel my back arch as I sort of, you know, lean back to get to, you know, go to the ball that's tossed a little bit behind me? Can I feel, if I'm working my forehand, can I feel what my footwork's supposed to look like? Can I feel the swing and, you know, and really focus on what that swing is supposed to feel like rather than focusing on every technical part of the stroke? And as we know, that focusing too much on technique and on the technical part of the game can, not for everybody, but can certainly get in our heads and can, obviously, you know, it's without good technique, we're limited in how, in our level. So obviously technique is a really important part of the game. However, focusing on it at the wrong times, particularly when we're competing, can certainly get in our heads and can cause us to second guess ourselves, can cause us to overthink, can cause us to doubt our technique, even comparing our technique to our opponent or to other people. So I really like that this approach really emphasizes the feel and emphasizes how is something supposed to feel and being able to practice that. Can we practice that on the practice court? Can we practice that through visualization? Can we practice that ahead of time so that when we're in the moment, we have a really clear sense of, okay, is that feeling the way that I want it to? Is that feeling the way that I intend? Is that feeling the way that that vision or that dream, as you described earlier, is it aligned with that vision or dream? So I think that's all really important as we think about this concept. And I think this also relates a lot to certain concepts that we've talked more about. We've talked a lot about the book, The Inner Game of Tennis. We had Sean Brawley on in an earlier episode, who has done a lot of work with Tim Galloway, the author of that book. And happy to share. I mean, I spent a summer where I was working for Sean and did coaching with him and learned some of the practices that he would use. So I think there's definitely, and I'm happy to talk about some of this. Happy to, you know, I think there's a lot of techniques that both he uses and Tim Galloway has used that relate a lot to the same idea.
Yeah, actually, I would love for you to maybe start that, Josh, with because you like you said, you were fortunate enough to work with Sean, you mentioned to me earlier how perhaps the forehand has been a project for you over the years.
Absolutely, has definitely been a project. Has not. Always or often been a strength. My backhand, I think, has always come more naturally, has been more of my strength. And I remember that summer, I think it was 2017, I believe. Yeah, it was 27. No, sorry, it was 2016. Summer of 20. No, it was 2015. It was 2015. That's what it was. It was right before my master's, actually. So the summer of 2015, I was working with Sean in Stamford, Connecticut. And we were talking about the forehand. And he said, let's get on court. Let's hit some balls. And we did a really interesting exercise where we'd be rallying. I think we started with, he would just feed me some balls. And then that then we progress to rallying. But before I'd even make contact with the ball, based on the feed, based on the shot that was being hit at me, he'd ask me to yell out a number, 1 through 10, based on sort of my confidence in my feel going into that shot. Was I ready to hit it? Did I have a clear sense of what I was going to try to do with that shot before I made contact, right? So if I'm in a, you know, if the ball was fed deeper or shorter, that might have an impact. But, you know, me having a clear goal or a clear vision of how the shot's supposed to look, how the shot's supposed to feel, would make a big impact in that situation. So that's one of the two situations that came to mind. Another one, and we had, you know, people can revisit, we did an episode with Sean earlier on, an interview with him, which I definitely suggest checking out. But another thing that came to mind, and we can link to this video because I think there's a lot that tennis players can learn from it. It's so after Sean, after Tim Galway came out with The Inner Game of Tennis, he came out with a book, The Inner Game of Golf. And he did a lot of work in this area as well. And there's a great video. And I've showed this video to some of the athletes that I've worked with, particularly golfers. But I think it has a lot to do with really being in tune with your sense of feel and your sense in that tactile sense. And what this video included, and I think this came out shortly after he released the book, so it's probably part of the, you know, sort of like a promotional tour type of thing, but he is talking to a woman who's golfing, who's putting. And what he asks her to do is to putt towards the hole, and she couldn't see the result of the shot. She could only putt and didn't end up knowing whether the ball went in the hole, whether it was 2 inches away, 5 inches away, 3 feet away, whatever. And Tim could see. Tim's standing by the hole. He could see the result of the shot. And from the camera angle, you can see it as well. And what was really interesting is after she would putt each time, he would ask her, so how did that feel? And how far away do you think that was? And maybe she'd say five inches, and it would actually be 2 inches away. And he'd tell her that, and maybe she'd make an adjustment and she'd self-correct. And she'd try again. And what you see in the video is it really is remarkable how within a minute or so, she starts to self-correct. She starts to adjust. She starts to, based on just how things are feeling and a little bit of feedback, she is starting to make the adjustments needed to improve her game, to improve her putting. So I think it, you know, when we originally talked about this idea, when you brought up this idea, Brian, this concept of the inner game of tennis immediately came to mind, because I think, you know, there's a key part of the book where they talk about really having a clear vision, a clear image for what a shot is supposed to look like or feel like. And I believe the example that was used, and again, this is the 70s when the book came out, so we can bring up 2020s equivalent of this, but they talked about, imagine you have a photographer from Sports Illustrated coming by, and they're going to take photos of you as you're playing tennis. And it doesn't matter if your shots go in or out, or you hit the ball over the fence. It really doesn't matter. All that matters is, do you look good for the photos? Do you look like a professional tennis player, or one of the best players in the world? And I think that idea is, you know, that intuitively we know what that, as long as we have a vision for what we want our form to look like, that's been imprinted and we are able to do it. So focusing more on, okay, let's sort of copy that form, let's replicate it, rather than thinking about all of the different pieces of my technique and my elbow and my shoulder and my take back and my footwork and all of these different things that are obviously important, but can certainly cause us to overthink. But instead, trying to have that clear vision, that clear feel for what it's supposed to look like and supposed to feel like, and trying to replicate that, and then judging ourselves based on that. Judging, okay, was that the type of feel that I wanted? Was that close? Was that really far? And then can we make adjustments as need be from there?
Yeah, and maybe judging also, perhaps not the exact right word, but maybe assessing,
Right. Maybe
right?
we want to do it a little more non-judgmentally, actually. In
Non-judgment, yeah,
fact.
because that then we get into the right and wrong and good and bad piece.
Yep.
But there are a couple things that came up there, Josh, so the idea of like that description for the photographer, today, think about certain shots or tactics that players might use or have used over the last 5 or 6 years that are not taught by a professional coach, the tweener. Now, there may be some coaches out there who are teaching it in a lesson,
I have.
I have not.
Mostly because I think it's
It's
fun, and I
fun,
think it
right?
adds a little
But how did
versatility.
you learn it?
Just by watching other people doing it, by thinking it was
Exactly.
cool, by tossing a ball in front of me, letting it bounce 4 or 5 times until the ball is nice and low, and sort
Yeah.
of trial by error without, luckily, without hurting myself.
But we, right, exactly. But your first exposure to it was some video, some player doing it, and like, oh, that looks like fun. But it wasn't like a class or a particular lesson, most likely for many of us. And so it is a perfect example of we can watch something and we can copy it and make it our own. I think for a while, remember the saber play, sneak attack by Roger? Yeah, I started seeing some of that at different academies. People would just do it. And no one was teaching that per se, or if they were, no one was listening. But they saw Roger Federer do it, and now it all of a sudden became kind of something to try. So I think that that is, we have to keep in mind a lot of the learning, it really comes from that visual piece, seeing it and creating blueprints in our own mind for what to copy and how it should look and how it should feel. I think that this the stuff that you talked about with Sean, and really what we're going over today overall is it's trying to promote more of an inside out approach to learning, meaning I'm and the putter really is all about this, right? She was learning what it felt like to hit it 2 inches away. She was learning what it felt like to go in the hole or 5 inches. So the adjustment wasn't to the result. It was to how it felt. What was the contact like? What was the muscle tension like in her hands, etc. So that's the great part about the result of the putt being hidden from her. Then she can be told what it is. Now it's not her making, ah, that was not a good putt or whatever. It's just, right, let me just change the feel of this a little bit. And then the inside part of that is once you are able to know what a successful putt or in tennis, a successful shot feels like, now you have something to repeat and replicate. Another approach that's a little bit more after the shot that Angelo Rossetti talked to us about in his episode with us was something that he called this 3-2-1 awareness drill. And so the 3-2-1 system is a system of assessment of what you felt out there. So let's say we use the kick serve example, Josh. You as the coach, your student hits a kick serve, and then you could ask them assess it on the 3-2-1 scale. Three, felt great. Really liked how that felt. It was smooth, etc. Two would be okay, and one would, not be a shot that we would want to repeat, right? And so the idea of using 3-2-1 is, language-wise, it doesn't carry the same weight as, great, okay, terrible. It's just these numbers. So we can just label it with 3-2-1. And then the idea is, can you really be more self-aware of the threes and pay attention to that so that you can begin to create a streak of threes by recreating the feeling in your body? And this gets a little bit back to the book With Winning in Mind by Lenny Basham, where the idea is to focus on your good shots. Study the good shots because the feel for creating the good shots, that's what you want to repeat. we all make mistakes, like we talked in our previous episode on, you know, the value of good mistakes. Yeah, there's good information there, but we want to focus on the good shots. When we do something well, understand it so that we can have that inside-out learning approach, right? We're learning it in our body so that the goal is to go to a place of almost unconscious proficiency. Like we unconsciously know how to do it. And when we're working in this process, you know, we're consciously working on it. Maybe we not be good at it yet. But so we may be consciously incompetent, then we maybe go to consciously competent. But then as we learn it and overlearn it, then it just becomes a strength, becomes a habit. We don't even have to think about it anymore. The feeling of how to do this is locked into our body. And I think that's a really valuable way to look at performance, whether it's with the stroke or just overall. Like you could now extrapolate that out to how to play a match. But I think starting off at this lower level can really help players build some of that self-awareness in their game so they get it. Like, oh yeah, this should be about feel. It shouldn't be about, and like you said, technique's important. But once you have the ability to make contact out in front and your racket faces at the right angle, kind of all the rest of the stuff isn't as important maybe as some people would make it out to be and can be a barrier, right? But the more that you know like what it feels like to hit these shots and what it feels like to compete, those are the things that you want to really focus on and prepare for each day and to try to create. Visualization and mindfulness and meditation are all great ways to help you promote more of that inner learning. But I have found, you know, working with some players, Josh, that this has been very valuable to them in maybe even learning a stroke that's been a project for some time. And I think the other additional thing that goes in to it that really helps is also learning to enjoy working on that particular stroke. Having a more positive image of how that stroke can help you. And you want to work on it and take on the challenge. So those positive feelings actually, I think as the learning goes on in the body, the positive feelings strengthen, you know, the signal to these new neural pathways. It actually helps lock it in more when you have more of these positive feelings going on towards what you're working on.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I think having that really clear vision leads to that development becoming so much easier. And I think it can also shift the way that we view a shot, right? So if we go in excited to improve on this shot and this has been our focus, I think when we have a shot that's a project, and I could use my forehand as an example here, and that's been, as we talked about earlier, a project for a long time. When it's time to hit a forehand or it's time to hit that shot, oftentimes people are dreading it. Rather than, can we get to a point where we've visualized ourselves hitting it really well? We have that really clear sense for what that feel of that shot is supposed to be like. And when it's time to hit it, we can get to that point where we're excited by it. You know, maybe it's still the case that we don't have the same sort of success rate with it that we do with another shot, and that's okay. There's always going to be something that's, you know, we don't want to be at a point where all of our shots are equally competent. We want to be at a point where obviously we have strengths, we have weaknesses, just like everybody does, just like the best players in the world do. But when it comes to that weakness or that project or, you know, that particular shot, it's the type of thing where, you know, we have a very clear goal. And then, you know, and then we're able to get that feedback so much easier that way. I think without that, it can be very easy to sort of stay still or get stuck with our progression. So I think having that really clear image of, okay, this is how it's supposed to feel. This is, you know, really what it's going to look like, is important. And then I think that the next big thing is how do we take that from, you know, that from sitting down in a chair or, you know, being able to do it at home and have, you know, that really clear idea of what it's supposed to feel like to being able to really utilize it. I think there's could be a progression that can take place there as well, where maybe it starts off the court, then maybe it's, you know, it's a situation on the court where somebody's just hand feeding you a ball, and then maybe you're doing it in a practice point, and then you taking that to a match. So I think there's different ways to do it, but I think some sort of a progression like that could help really bring that skill to life, to bring it into a higher pressure situation.
For sure. And I think, you know, to help open yourself up to learning some of the basic skills that we've discussed many times can, you know, are instrumental here. So working on your breathing to get your, you know, your mind and body open to learning. So being more perceptive, being willing to solve problems, being less judgmental, active relaxation skills, being able to think and notice where tension is in your body, feeling free to shake out your arms and legs so that you can feel like your body can flow more, bringing more positive emotions and positive images about whatever you're working on so that you have some blueprints in your mind of what to do. And to me, I think that would be sort of the preparation that I would want everybody to have when they go to the court in order to try to really work on feel and self-awareness is do these little things prior so that your body and your mind are in a state where you can learn and be receptive to what's happening. You know, the more positive we are, the more open we are to learning. The more that our breathing is in rhythm, we're in more mental coherence, the better we will be with learning. And then just try, I would, you know, emphasize people just really trying this out. I think if you're not working with a coach, the 3-2-1 awareness piece is very usable on your own. I really like the Sean Brawley exercise because it's, again, it's really tuning you into how you're feeling, your confidence level, et cetera. I'm curious, Josh, if you can even remember, it was a while ago, but over as the drill went along, what was your learning experience? Were you actually like increasing levels of intention and confidence just via being asked to do this?
It definitely helped. It definitely did. I noticed an improvement with my performance. I noticed I was maybe more ready or more confident to hit each shot, even more challenging ones. And I think I also started to become more aware of what are the situations where I start to get maybe more hesitant or cautious or fear missing on that side. You know, maybe it's when the ball gets closer into my body or when it's at a certain height or whatever it is. But yeah, I remember there definitely being an improvement and also that learning piece, that awareness piece of myself of, okay, what are the situations where this feels really easy for me and I feel really confident going into hitting the shot, and what are the situations where that's not the case, and I don't feel confident, I feel hesitant or scared to miss, and that being sort of the overwhelming feeling going into a particular shot.
Yeah, so I really like that drill. I think that's something if you know if coaches are out there listening, would be very interesting to try in private sessions with players, or even bringing it up to your coach. That hey, you heard about this drill? Can we try this out? Because again, this is much more about learning it this internally, that feeling, as opposed to judging everything based on the result of the shot. That's important, but it's also important to relate it back to how did this all feel in my body? Because very often in matches, you probably get this too, Josh. You get a player come to you and just say, "Well, you know, my service wasn't working today," or whatever. It could be any stroke. Something where I was tight, and pretty much the discussion ends. And a lot of that's because there's not much self-awareness on how one needs to feel in order to perform well. You know, I'm a big believer in that the better you feel mentally and physically, the better chance you have of performing well. If you don't feel great out there and you're not performing well mentally or, you know, thinking well, it's going to be very difficult. But what are the typical adjustments players will make? They'll try to do technical changes, or they may do tactical changes, or completely shift their whole strategy. And sometimes that stuff works, but I would say the likelihood of those adjustments working are much lower than if you start to come back to how are my shots supposed to feel. Of course, if you've never worked on that field, then you don't know. But of course, you know, you can go back to, let me just breathe and slow things down. Let me work on some active relaxation. Let me create some positive images in my mind of what I want to do. Then at least you begin to get yourself back to a place of feeling good. And that's what I think this whole journey, a lot of it is about, Josh, is really locking in and understanding the feeling of great performance. And we can, you know, the more that people are working on that aspect of their games, then adjustments during matches become, you're making the right adjustments by going to how is my game feeling rather than what are all the results of the points and am I making mistakes, etc.
Totally, totally. I actually wanted to go back to something that you said earlier, right? If you talk to a player and ask them to assess a particular performance and they say, yeah, my serve wasn't working, or yeah, I felt tight out there. And to me, I go back to, okay, thank you. That makes sense. But what did you try to do about it?
Exactly.
Right. So if your serve wasn't working, what does that mean? Does that mean that you weren't making enough first serves? Does that mean that you were double faulting? Did you try to make adjustments there? If you weren't making enough first serves, did you maybe try to add more spin, take off a few miles per hour, give yourself a little bit more margin, a little more margin over the net, a little bit further away from the lines, so that hopefully you can increase that first serve percentage? You know, I think one of the biggest differences between pros and everybody else is that first serve percentage, that it just tends to be so much higher. They tend to not rely on their second serve so much. If it's your second serve that's the issue, again, can you make more first serves so that you're not having to hit as many second serves? Can you make other adjustments? Can you, you know, add more spin to that second serve? Can you maybe adjust the risk level, whatever it is? But what did you try? Right? Were you trying to be a problem solver out there? Or if it's, you know, I felt tight out there, and that's going to happen. I think everybody has probably experienced that to some degree. What did you do? Did you try to focus on your breathing? Did you, you know, I think progressive muscle relaxation is something that can be very beneficial for athletes, for tennis players, because I think that is the type of thing that leads to more body awareness, and you start to feel, okay, maybe I'm holding tension or I'm holding tightness in a certain part of my body, and then I have a tool to release that. And I think we've talked about that a little bit here, but if people aren't familiar, that's sort of a process of tightening and tensing certain parts of your body and then loosening them. So generally we'll start with somebody's feet, and they'll and you could even try this now. You could, you know, scrunch your toes, really scrunch your toes and really hold that tension, you know, bringing your toes closer to your heel, and really hold it, and then release it. And as you release that tension, feeling that part of your body and your body as a whole start to relax. And then doing that with your calf, and then your quad, and then your abs and your core, and then up to your, you know, shoulders and back and chest, and then your neck, and then even your face, right?
Arms.
But your arms, absolutely. but going through a process of, you know, that tensing and loosening and starting to become more aware of where am I holding tension? And then if I'm feeling tense in a moment, in a key moment in a match, do I have that tool to loosen up that tension, to hopefully get rid of some of that tension? We had an episode with Jeff Greenwald, where we talked about some of this type of stuff and how he would work with players and have them try to become pretty aware of what it's like to play super, super, super loose, and then what it's like to play extremely tense, and have them practice intentionally playing each way at practice. And if one way is a 10, 10 being, you know, as tense as possible, and one is a zero or a one, as loose as possible, can you, during practice, can you play at a 10? Can you play at a one? Can you find that five? What does seven look like? What does three look like? And then figuring out where do you play best and being able to bring out that seven, if that's where you feel like you play best, or bring out that three, or maybe adjust as needed in a match and feel like you have the tools to do that as well. So I think it's important, just going back to your point, it's important to feel like you have the tools and then be able to tie that into that sort of clear image of what it's supposed to look and feel like, because it's generally not supposed to feel super, super tense. Your body's not supposed to feel super tense as you're playing. And I think for the vast, vast majority of people, they don't play their best that way. So if you notice that tension, that should be sort of a red flag, you know, an alarm should be going off that, okay, something's wrong here. This doesn't feel right. And then taking it to that next level, do I feel capable of adjusting that tension, adjusting the way that I'm feeling in the moment?
And the first step is really noticing, being aware.
Yep.
Because if you're not aware of the tension, then you don't know the adjustment to make. Good point about Jeff Greenwald. Actually, there's since you do work with some golfers, Josh, there's two women, Pia Nielsen and Lynn Marriott. They run a business called Vision 54 in Arizona. And they talk a lot about, you know, experimenting with, like you just said, looseness and tension, playing really fast, playing really slow in other areas, right? To really explore the extremes so that you know what they feel like, and then you find the right balance for you. We've often talked about that with respect to intensity and overall arousal, that it's different for all of us. And so I think that's one real key here, is that we can't necessarily tell you exactly how you need to feel, because that we would be projecting that onto you. You need to figure that out for yourself. And again, that's where the true learning is through the experience of it. It's, you know, taking information from a coach, from a sports psychology professional, and then experimenting with it, learning how it feels for you and making it work for yourself. That's the experiential learning that leads to true knowledge, true self-knowledge, true awareness. And I think that's really kind of the beauty of, you know, what we've talked about today, taking this resonance performance model, but turning it into feel and flow and the inner game of tennis and all about as a probably a more effective model of learning the game.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, when it comes to flow, I know we've referenced that a little bit here. We actually did an episode on that. So if people are interested in that topic, definitely worth checking out. But, you know, I think most people can think back to a situation where they felt like they were in flow, maybe multiple situations. So can you think back to that? Can you really have a very clear feeling, you know, what does that feel like? What did that feel like that day where everything was in flow, where everything felt pretty effortless, where, you know, time was moving maybe differently than it normally does, where you didn't feel like you had to overthink things and overthink your technique. You're kind of, you know, more so letting go and letting it happen. What did that feel like? And can we have a really clear image of that? And I think that having that, you know, and focusing on that makes it easier to get into that flow state. I often hear people talking about wanting to be there more, which makes sense. And I think it's notoriously hard to get into or elusive. Nobody's always there. So it's, can we have a very clear sense of what it is like to be in flow? And hopefully that makes it a little bit easier for us to get there a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, definitely recommend that episode that we had on flow, as well as some of these other ones that we have referenced today. So hopefully everyone was able to get, you know, some good tips for their own learning and self-awareness through this episode. And of course, we thank you for listening to the show. So for more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. If you have any feedback or questions for me and Josh, please email us at tennisiqpodcast tennisiq@gmail.com. You can also use the Twitter hashtag TennisIQ. Additionally, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube, so you can be notified of new episodes. You can also check us out on Instagram. If you would like to support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiq/membership. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.